This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Ohio had more than 1,400 oil and gas well incidents from 2018 to 2023, according to state records analyzed by Frack Tracker Alliance. Today on Earth Day and throughout this week, we're going to focus on the environment, and we're going to start by discussing this report, its implications, and what Ohio's oil and gas industry has to say about the findings. Joining me now are Frack Tracker Alliance Midwest Program Coordinator, Gwen Klenke. Welcome, Gwen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Ohio Environmental Council and Ohio Environmental Council Action Fund Senior Attorney for Lands and Water, Nathan Johnson. Thanks for being here, Nathan.
Hi, Lucy. Thank you for having me.
And Buckeye Environmental Network Board Member and former Youngstown Fire Department Battalion Chief, Silverio Cajano. Welcome, Sil.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
We appreciate all of you being here. We invited the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and Ohio Oil and Gas Association to join today's discussion. Both declined. The Oil and Gas Association sent a statement that we'll discuss later during the conversation. Gwen, first explain what was behind this report and where you got the information that was analyzed.
Thanks so much for asking that. So previously on an episode of All Sides with Anna Staver that ran out of Cleveland Public Radio, Save Ohio Parks, a small community group, served on a panel with Rob Brendrett, the Ohio Oil and Gas Association president, who mentioned offhand that there had only been one or two incidences in the state related to oil and gas wells. That kind of alerted Save Ohio Parks. They felt like that number might be a little bit off. So they did some digging and they made a public records request to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, who provided us with this data set of about 1,400 to 1,500 records.
And just to clarify, I believe All Sides with Anna Staver is out of Columbus, from WOSU. We actually have audio from that.
The industry's really took off about, 12, 13 years ago. And I think we're only talking about, one or two instances right here. And so obviously the focus of the industry is on the health and safety. Our people work here. They live here. There's no incentive not to be safety conscious. We work as a basin with OSHA through a program called Appalachian Steps to make sure that the industry itself is doing the absolute most modern and up-to-date issues on anything safety and safety type of things to ensure that that we mitigate and work to so that no issues happen. Environmentally, I think the record pretty much stands for itself. We've not had any real instances environmentally, the oil and gas industry here in Ohio. We work very, very hard to ensure that we are good stewards of the properties we work on.
And in that interview, which again was on WOSU's All Sides with Anna Staver, the host and Mr. Brundrett go on to talk about a couple of highly publicized incidents, and Mr. Brundrett says, hey, those are isolated incidents. Once you spent time, Gwen, sorting through all this data, what were your conclusions about oil and gas incidents in Ohio?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I really wasn't able to make any conclusions. I set off on this project in the hopes that I would be able to have some sort of an accurate count. But what we found was that the data was so messy and lacking that we really weren't able to make a definitive answer on how many incidents there had been on the state. You had things like house explosions in the same data set as complaints made by residents who smelled a gas smell. So it's really hard for us to kind of distinguish and work through getting an accurate count from that.
Well, you said, I think you just described the data as messy. Tell us a little bit more about the concerns you have had about the data itself as you were trying to kind of sort through it and analyze it.
Yeah, so anyone who works with data is, pretty adept at working with what we consider to be messy data, which can be incomplete or lacking in certain areas. What we found was that we had a lot of records that had no locational information, so no idea on where it occurred. We were lucky if we got a street name on a lot of records. We also found that many records were categorized in a way in which we didn't really agree with. And while we may not agree with it, you know, we understand that ODNR has their own categorizations. But when we looked to see how ODNR was categorizing these incidents, we couldn't find any information on why they were making the decisions that they were making. And so we felt like a lot of the data and a lot of the severity of many of the incidences were being understated.
Nathan, the Frack Tracker report calls the Ohio Department of Natural Resources data rife with errors and cites two examples where a house explosion was not categorized as major or severe. What are your thoughts about the ODNR classifications and Frack Tracker's assessments of them?
I think one of the major take-homes is that the industry, the oil and gas industry, is not the sort of thing that comes without risk. And the data may be messy, but there's clearly a picture we're seeing if you just look at the data that problems are occurring. You know, whether there are quote unquote small spill or a release, an explosion, those problems are part of the picture and part of the risk profile that we're dealing with anytime we're allowing oil and gas to come into an area.
And Nathan, Frack Tracker says there were about 1,400 incidents between 2018 and 2023. Again, there's some issues with the data that they were dealing with to kind of get to that number. What's your take on those incidents and the number of them over this period of time? Does it seem like a lot? Do we have any idea?
I mean, that does seem like a lot. And I think part of the picture, too, is to bear in mind that the fracking industry in Ohio, and by fracking, I mean the shale development, the high volume, horizontal, unconventional, it's also called. That's been going on in Ohio since about 2010. So the study, the report, doesn't capture all the incidents that have happened over the course of the past several years. I also wonder, too, how much is going unreported? How much is not even necessarily in the ambit of this data, because you have things like truck incidents that may not be occurring at the well pad. Those certainly happen, where trucks carrying chemicals or oil and gas waste will spill over. We've certainly seen that. So I do wonder if all of what's happening is being captured. I certainly don't think so. And the concern is very real, and maybe we'll get to it, but I think all the more so right now, given the fact that the state is really pushing to bring oil and gas development into state parks.
We're talking about a new report that claims Ohio's system for tracking oil and gas incidents has inaccuracies. Do you have questions about the report or its implications? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Sil, you're a battalion chief with the Youngstown Fire Department. How do these incidents affect first responders when they happen?
Well, first off, the longstanding fight that I've had with them since I first jumped down the rabbit hole back in 2010 was there is no reporting of anything. It's a big mystery. Yes, they claim that 60 days after the wellhead closes, or they're done drilling, they put out a report, but that doesn't do me any good when the well is exploding and dumping its content, or a truck loaded with brine and other chemicals is on its way to an injection well and rolls over in, say, Trumbull County or Mahoney County or, you know, one of the counties in Ohio, and now firefighters are up to their knees in it trying to solve the problem, and there is no material safety data sheets that should be carried to let you know what's in it. And, you know,
so
some of this
stuff. I just want to stop you there, Sil. So you're saying that first responders go into these situations without knowing what chemicals they're dealing with?
Absolutely. They're in Ohio. They have no right to know this stuff. And like I said, the industry will push back all the time and say, well, you know, 60 days after we've closed closed drilling on the well, we let everybody know it's in there. And again, I say, yeah, that's great. But when the wellhead's going off in the air, and like they had with the Stat Oil fire down there in Monroe County, those people had no knowledge of what they were getting into, and that does pose a problem. And this whole fairy tale of we're from the oil and gas company, and we're here to help you and make Ohio, you know, prosperous. And we don't have any accidents. As you can see, it's a fiction. These incidents happen. And there's a saying in the fire service, when, you know, your constitutional and civil rights have been violated, you call the police department. For everything else, you call the fire department. So when this stuff happens, they're not calling the police departments to solve the problems. They're calling the fire departments, and we're getting ourselves involved in this stuff. There are some training classes that try to teach these people that respond to these things, these firemen, how to handle it. But these classes are far and few in between, and it's very difficult for the fire departments that mostly are involved in this, who are mostly rural, to get their people there in there to get trained so that they know what's going on. And even then, they're still not getting the safety data sheets for the chemicals involved. And the biggest one I worry about is the radium. It's also found in your conventional wells. The stuff that's being used in some areas in Ohio for brine, spreading on the roads, it's got radium-226 and 228 in it, as well as other heavy metals. So this is all dangerous. And to try to make a statement that, you know, we're being good to the community, 1,400 spills a year, or 1,400 spills in the, that span of, from 2018 to 2024, says otherwise. And that's just the ones that we know about. What ones are being covered up? We don't know.
I want to mention again that we invited a representative of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources to be part of the conversation today to talk about their data, how it's collected. They declined to join. We also did invite a representative from the Ohio Oil and Gas Association to be part of today's conversation. The association declined our invitation but sent us a statement about the Frack Tracker report. That statement reads in part, "We invited the Ohio Oil and Gas Station onto the program." Okay, this is the statement from President Rob Brundret, at least in part. It reads, "Ohio has nearly 63,000 wells operating 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Ohio also has thousands of miles of gas pipelines operating all day, every day. The wells and lines produce and transport affordable and reliable energy to Ohio's citizens in all seasons to provide for the health and safety of families across the state. It is a testament to the safety and the rigorous standards of the industry that there have only been 3 major incidents since 2018, which means that only 0.004% of Ohio oil and gas operations have had a major reportable incident." Again, that is part of a statement that we got from Ohio Oil and Gas Association President Rob Brundret. You can read the full statement on our website, wvxu.org. Gwen, what do you think about that? The association essentially saying, as I understand it, that the oil and gas industry is safe. In part of the statement, he points out that it's as safe or safer than any manual industry in Ohio. In another part of the statement, he talks about how the industry's transparency is why you all have all this information. How do you think about the way the association is responding to this?
Yeah, I think it's very telling that the industry is able to speak with such certainty. The point of my report was not to determine that the state of oil and gas in Ohio is or is not unsafe, but to kind of piece out what's going on. And so when originally they said that there were only 2 major incidences and that this is less than 1% of all of the industry that's going on in the state, I found that there were definitely more than 2. I think we're just moving the goalpost in this conversation on what we're considering to be safe or not safe. And I think it's just really telling that he's able to speak with such certainty about these incidences when I was able to determine otherwise. Mm-hmm.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, Earth had the hottest March on record, the planet's 10th record-breaking month in a row. We'll talk about why. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a new report that claims Ohio's system for tracking oil and gas incidents has inaccuracies. My guests are Frack Tracker Alliance Midwest Program Coordinator Gwen Klenke, Ohio Environmental Council and Ohio Environmental Council Action Fund, Senior Attorney for Lands and Water, Nathan Johnson, and Buckeye Environmental Network Board Member and former Youngstown Fire Department Battalion Chief, Silverio Cajano. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Before the break, we were talking about the industry's response to this report. What do you think, Nathan? What do you think about the way the industry responds to what the Frack Tracker report found?
Well, I think the response that fracking is safe and has only had a handful of incidents is really a myth. And that this report that shows over 1,400 incidents over just the past few years certainly should put that kind of line of thinking to bed. I think, though, that one layer here that we haven't really mentioned and haven't really taken into account is that a lot of the negative environmental impacts, human health impacts from this industry aren't coming in the form of a discrete incident. A lot of it's coming from the fact, for example, that the industry is constantly emitting a lot of hazardous air pollution. And that's coming off of, you know, the infrastructure, the well pads where the drilling and then the production occurs. And this is a constant source of pollution. This is not something that magically goes away or only happens once in a while. This is going to be happening during the lifetime, the entire operation of the well. And there's a lot of scientific literature out there showing that if one lives in relative close proximity to these operations, you're going to see things like higher incidences of cancer, of low birth weights, of preterm birth, headaches, fatigue, asthma, heart attack rates, mortality rates in the elderly. So it's certainly not just limited to incidents. It's certainly got a much more chronic, aspect to it that's deeply concerning.
Syl, is that one of the issues that concerns you, these direct effects that, you know, humans can experience in their health, or I guess even, you know, even animals that can come into contact with these substances during these incidents or even just as they're operating?
Well, yeah, definitely. But to reach back to the statement, there's only been a few. I can think of three incidents that happened at wellheads off the top of my head that grabbed international, not just national, international attention. Ohio now owns the record for putting methane into the air from the Powhatan well blowout. It holds the record, entire United States record. Its plume was so large, it was picked up by a satellite from, I believe, Norway, from outer space. The issue down at Statoil, it caused Equinor to totally rethink its North American plan because of the amount of damage that was done. It reached all the way into the Ohio River, and we don't know what the environmental effects are. But I also agree with Nathan, there is collateral damage done by the infrastructure in of itself. When you think oil wells or gas wells, you also have to think of the infrastructure. The infrastructure is the pipelines. The infrastructure is the compressor stations. There's dangers with the compressor stations. The infrastructure is injection wells and all the things that go with the injection wells. We're just dealing with a situation down in Martin's Ferry where one of the companies that clean up injection well filters and the filters that come from these compressor stations, Austin Masters, their industrial hygiene caused them to get shut down by the state attorney general. Now you really got to be doing something bad when the people who are, playing with the oil and gas industry shut you down. But it isn't something that ODNR just suddenly found out. We had been drawing attention to the poor industrial hygiene at that facility for years. And now you have the potential that at least two aquifers or aquifers to two towns has now been contaminated with radium. I mean, yeah, the collateral damage is bad. And, the wellheads are just one source of this. And it's a downstream issue. I do believe there's a book coming out from Justin Noble called Petroleum 238 that actually speaks to all of this and goes more in depth of the actual damage that's being done all the way down the line. So, yeah, the chemicals, the people's the damage that the people will incur from being around those facilities, It's all documented and, you know, available for research. And it's not just the wellheads themselves. It's the compressor stations. It's the pipelines. It's the ancillary businesses that deal with the injection wells and all their, you know, the product that comes off of them. And it's us ourselves. You know, when I was reading some of those reports, one of the things that jumped out to me, if you had a truck spill, they kind of classified that as minor, but that's brine. This truck rolled over into some farmer's property, spilled salt and radium into this guy's property, but there is absolutely no mention in these reports of the mitigation efforts. How much radium was found? Did they find radium? What was the salt content? What was the specific gravity of the soil with the salt content? None of that's in there. And it's classified as minor. Well, if you're the guy that owns the property and you're a farmer, to me, that's major to that poor guy. He might end up swallowing an acre's worth of property that can't be used anymore. So
that incident that you were talking about, Syl, I believe was an incident in Belmont County that happened in February of 2018 at a well owned by XTO Energy, a subsidiary of ExxonMobil. And I understand it took 20 days to get it under control.
And that's correct. And in doing that, it created the largest release of methane in the United States. I believe the period of time that it did it, it exuded more methane than four large countries in Europe. So when they say that they've only had a few, and it kind of speaks to what I found when I was looking at it, the big ones are the ones that they mentioned. The ones that didn't make the newspapers or didn't make, you know, news at six, at, you know, WXYZ or whatever news, those are kind of minor. If they make it to the news, they're major. If they don't, well, you know, you didn't see it, it didn't occur.
And so do first responders in particular, firefighters in particular, have concerns about the health impacts of these chemicals? I mean, Nathan said, you know, just the operations of these wells and systems have impacts for people who live all around them. But what about first responders who are dealing with such concentrated amounts when there are these incidents?
Well, yeah, most definitely. And there's a lot more on a wellhead, you know, an actively drilling wellhead than just the chemicals. There are explosives, there are radioactive substances. There's a lot of things there that can cause danger. If you ever read the report for the Statoil explosion down there in Monroe County, there's a whole host of things that could hurt people. And if you don't know they're there, I mean, in that particular incident, it took the EPA, I think, 5 days to get a full report of the chemicals. If I don't know what I'm dealing with, I'm not going to send my guys in to try to mitigate something. I don't know what the chemical is. I don't know how I'm going to handle it. We look at things, whether do they sink in the water column? Do they raise in the air? Are they lighter? You know, what the specific gravity is, what the vapor density is, blah, 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 blah. And we make a decision on how we're going to handle the situation without me knowing the properties of what I'm dealing with. I can't do anything, and I'm not going to send people in there to risk their lives. And unfortunately, in this situation, the more time that it takes us to mitigate it, the more damage it does to environment, property, and people. It's just a sad fact, but that, you know, it is what it is. In Pennsylvania, they passed a law where when you start drilling a well, you got to sit down with the EMS and fire and police and let them know, hey, this is what we're dealing with. And how would you like to have somebody that gets pulled out of a truck rollover and they're loaded with radium 226 and 228 because their truck was carrying that as well as heavy metals? Now my ambulance crew takes them to the hospital. They're unaware of what they're into. Now they're sitting in an emergency room with a lot of other sick people, off vaporing and contaminated with all of this stuff. It causes a problem.
Yeah. Nathan, I understand what the industry says about, you know, giving the chemical makeup of these chemicals that they're using in these operations is, well, hey, this is proprietary information. We don't want to give away our trade secrets. Is there a way for the industry to provide this information without giving away trade secrets?
The industry can voluntarily provide the information to government officials and that sort of thing. So that's one way. But so much of this is locked behind trade secret protections that it does make for a lot of difficulty for first responders and others. And, you know, part of the problem, too, is that if we're talking emergency response situations, you know, so much of that information would have to come in very quickly And at some point, you know, it can be too late. If you're out there fighting an emergency or trying to respond, you know, that information can come too little too late.
Gwen, what do you want to see happen as a result of this report?
That's a really good question. Something I'd like to see happen is I would love for the DNR to just evaluate kind of the work that they're doing. You know, they're limited by their capacity, but just double checking that the work that they are recording is accurate and helpful. And everyone just being more upfront with this information before we're even asking for it would be really helpful. North Dakota has, you know, really robust oil and gas production, and they make available a large chunk of the data that they collect. So we're just looking for a little more transparency and a little more due diligence to the degree that folks can do that.
Well, in the spirit of transparency, I wanted to mention that, am I correct that Save Ohio Parks, Jenny Morgan with Save Ohio Parks, was the one who kind of suggested you all analyze this data, Gwen?
Absolutely. We've been working with Save Ohio Parks for some time now.
Yeah. Nathan, you referenced this a little earlier, but this report comes out as environmental groups continue to fight against fracking under public land. Do you think this information and this report should inform that debate in some way?
It should, you know, on top of all the chronic problems from, for example, having well pads surrounding Salt Fork State Park, which is what the state is proposing to allow, with all that air pollution that could be coming in. You know, we're looking at potential for fires, explosions, truck traffic, which is another thing we've not really talked about necessarily. There's definitely the risk of spills, but also just the normal hazards of having massively increased heavy truck traffic in these small rural roads can be very dangerous for folks who are just trying to get out there, get into the outdoors and you know, enjoy those health benefits. So it's very concerning. And I think part of it is, you know, we're in Ohio. We don't necessarily have, you know, 50 million acres of a pristine wilderness. We have some great public lands. But the public lands that we have, we've really got to invest in protecting them. We've got a lot of people and not that much land per person. So it's all the more important that we make sure these places are safe, inviting, and really enjoyable for folks to go to.
Well, I've been talking with Frack Tracker Alliance Midwest Program Coordinator Gwen Klenke, Ohio Environmental Council and Ohio Environmental Council Action Fund Senior Attorney for Lands and Water Nathan Johnson, and Buckeye Environmental Network Board Member and former Youngstown Fire Department Battalion Chief Silverio Cajano. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
You can find a link to the Frack Tracker report and the text of the Ohio Oil and Gas Association's full statement on our website, wvxu.org. Up next, Earth had the hottest March on record, the planet's 10th record-breaking month in a row. We'll talk about what's behind these rising temperatures. This is Cincinnati Edition.